Good morning. It's 9:30. This is a reading of the Green Valley News for Monday, October 13th, here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Mark DeGroft with you this morning. Two people were injured early on Sunday after a driver lost control of a vehicle, skidded off the road, and hit several trees on Aravaca Road. This according to the Santa Rita Fire District. Crews responded to milepost 19 just northeast of Aravaca at about 2 o'clock in the morning and found an eastbound Honda Accord at the base of a tree. An SRFD spokesman said that the driver, a man in his 30s, had minor injuries and his passenger, a woman in her 30s, had serious injuries as well. Both are from Tucson and both were taken to a trauma center for further treatment. The Pima County Sheriff's Department is still investigating the cause of the crash. Southeastern Arizona, including Green Valley and Suarita, are under a flood watch until 5 o'clock p.m. today, according to the National Weather Service in Tucson. The latest forecast that was issued on Saturday afternoon puts rainfall expectation for the area at least 2 to 3 inches. The main forecast concern is the potential for long-duration heavy rainfall with widespread showers and isolated thunderstorms Saturday through today. Precipitation chances increased to 50% to 90% through Monday, and impacts are expected to be moderate to major. Potential impacts include water flowing in normally dry washes and low water crossings, with longer-term impacts being rising stream and river levels. In the most likely rainfall total scenario, we will see rises on streams and main rivers, and the high-end rainfall scenarios, there is the potential for some rivers reaching or exceeding the banks. Colorado Basin Forecast Center is forecasting that the San Pedro at Palominas to approach action stage on Monday, and Palominas is about 50 miles east of Nogales along the border. There is still a forecast uncertainty regarding exact precipitation totals. The most likely rainfall scenario has totals generating the 1 to 3 inch range in Saturday through Monday time frame. High-end rainfall scenarios at 75th percentile have widespread rainfall amounts of 3 to 5 inches in the Saturday through Monday time frame. And lower-end rainfall scenarios have 0.20 to 0.80 inches of rainfall along the international border through the Monday time frame. And the way Dave sees it, the young man who broke into his Suarita house early on Tuesday is lucky, and so is he. The intruder didn't get shot, and David didn't have to shoot him. In what authorities have said is an unusual case, the unidentified burglar broke into David's family home in the Santa Cruz Meadows at about 2 o'clock in the morning, stayed for 7 hours, and then left, having disturbed little and without stealing anything. The Green Valley News is not using David's last name because he is a crime victim. David, who's a law enforcement officer, was on vacation with his family when he saw an alert on his phone at 9:13 a.m. on Tuesday. He saw a young man, possibly a teenager, walking away from his home. He initially thought he had stolen an Amazon package that might have been delivered on Monday. I showed my wife, and then she looked at it and goes, "No, he walked out of our house." I couldn't believe it, so I watched, and I go, "You're right, he did. Looks like he walked out of our house." They went back and found doorbell camera videos of the burglar being dropped off at 2:13 a.m., him trying the front door twice and then leaving at 9:13 a.m. David called his neighbor, who discovered all the screens were off the windows in the back of the house. The neighbor then called 911, and David and his family headed back home. It appears as though the young man walked to the side of the house when he couldn't get in through the front door, jumped the locked gate, knocking down trash cans in the process. His neighbor, awakened by the noise, assumed someone was taking out the trash or that javelinas were scavenging. The burglar then methodically went window to window, removing the screens and trying to open them. I'm in law enforcement, so I do take security very seriously. So I had made sure that the patio door and all the windows had been locked, David said. I even waited at the garage door to shut securely before leaving on vacation, so I know everything was locked. I do that every time. It's very consistent. Every night I do that. There's evidence that when he couldn't find an unlocked window, the young man used a piece of wood to pry one open, damaging the frame, Dave said. The burglar then closed the window. Shockingly, there were only a few other clues to indicate that there had been somebody inside, David said. The blankets on the couch were disturbed, the TV remote was under the couch, and the fan and remote was no longer on the wall. The rest of the house is undisturbed. There's no water cups there. He didn't leave with anything in his hands that we could see, David said. So he didn't seem to even drink water or rummage through the fridge or the pantry. Nothing like that seemed to be disturbed or even moved. So I would imagine he woke up, realized he wasn't in the correct house, and then walked out the front door. There were guns, cash, and other valuables in the home, but nothing was taken, David said. And because the burglar made funny faces at the camera and stumbled in the entryway, David thinks he maybe have been under the influence of a mind-altering substance. David posted doorbell camera footage on his Facebook page and on the Residents of Rancho Suarita page, and police have been collecting his neighbor's footage as well. They tracked him to walk down the west of our house, walked over the bridge into the D.R. Horton side of the northern side of Santa Cruz Meadows, and were actually tracking him to the point where I'm going to put out flyers on the mailboxes and pass them out personally, David said. He is confident the intruder is familiar with the area and will be recognized by someone. He also suspects someone is going to recognize the young man's T-shirt with the coordinates of Yosemite National Park on the back. Suarita Police Lieutenant Michael Falquez said that the crime scene techs processed the scene for fingerprints and DNA. "It's a first for me," Falquez said of the case. David hopes the young man will turn himself in. "I want to make it clear, too. It's not lost on me that he didn't destroy the house or steal anything, so I'm open to a conversation, possibly with the kid. I mean, restitution I feel is obligated, being he damaged my property and I need new screens and to fix the window. But as far as punitively, I'm not angry. Obviously, he was under the influence. I think we all make bad decisions when we were younger. He just happened to be making some really bad decisions along the way, but I also want to make it clear to him that he's very lucky that I wasn't home. We do have guns in the house, and I'm more than willing to defend our family and myself to the point where a forcible entry, there's only one real solution to that." The victim in Tuesday's fatal rollover crash on Interstate 19 has been identified as Selena Marie Costa, a 38-year-old Suarita resident. According to Arizona Department of Public Safety spokesman Bart Graves, the front seat occupants of a passenger vehicle got into a physical altercation while driving north on I-19 around 8:30 in the morning. The vehicle drove into the median near Pompago Road and then rolled over, and both of the people in the front seats were thrown from the vehicle, Graves said. Costa, the front seat passenger, was pronounced dead at the scene, and the driver was taken to Banner University Medical Center main campus with life-threatening injuries, officials said. Two children in the back seat were taken to the same hospital with non-life-threatening injuries via ambulance. According to the Santa Rita Fire District, crews from several agencies were dispatched to the crash. A Tohono O'odham Fire Department battalion chief found the vehicle on its roof with some occupants on the ground and others walking around. An off-duty AMR medic was already on the scene providing care. And northbound I-19 lanes were closed for about 2 hours. At least 50,000 gallons of water flowed down Abrego Drive on Friday morning after a 52-year-old water main broke in the Green Valley Country Club Estates. The leak bobbled out of the road on the west side of Abrego, just north of the golf club, and then traveled nearly a half a mile north to a drainage point. Community Water Company of Green Valley said that the 4-inch asbestos cement line was installed in 1973. The company completed repairs on Friday with no disruption to service. A spokesman said indications are the leak hadn't been present long, though there were some signs of a sinkhole. A valve about 60 feet from the leak will need repair, according to Community Water. In a March 2024 Green Valley news story about the stability of water pipes across Green Valley's 6 water companies, Community Water General Manager Arturo Gabaldon said they serve about 24,000 people. The vast majority of the utility's 159 miles of pipe are made of asbestos concrete, and the utility later began using plastic pipes and has switched to ductile iron pipes, Gabaldon said at the time. Pipes that need to be replaced are replaced with the ductile iron, he said. He said that they average 8 main breaks and replacements annually. Well, visa issues have led to the cancellation of the season opening home series for the Tucson baseball team out of Mexico. The team was scheduled to take on the Hermosillo Naranjeros on October 16th through 19 at Kino Veterans Memorial Stadium. The team may also have to cancel its second home series that begins on October 24th. Tucson baseball owner Victor Cuevas Jr. told Pima County on Friday that the U.S. Consulate General in Hermosillo informed them on October 3rd that B-1 and B-2 visas issued to the team by the Department of Homeland Security were likely invalid following the team's relocation to Tucson. The consulate suggested the team contact U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services for proper visas. Cuevas said that he has been in discussions with the State Department to obtain the correct visas and hopes that the issues will be resolved quickly. B-1 and B-2 visas allow temporary entry into the United States for business, B-1, or tourism and medical treatment, B-2. There was no clear explanation as to why the visas were invalidated. Formerly known as Mayos de Navajoa, the Tucson baseball team announced in May that it would move its operation to Tucson, becoming the first team from the Mexican Pacific League based in the United States. It plans to let fans name the team. Pima County Board of Supervisors Chair Rex Scott said the county would do what it could to help resolve the visa problem. It's unfortunate this issue came up so close to the start of the season, but I'm optimistic that this issue can be resolved and the team will be able to play its first home games at Kino Stadium this fall, Scott said in a statement. The Cuevas family said in a statement the visa decision had been extremely difficult for our entire organization and said that fans who purchase tickets for opening day and season ticket holders will receive refunds. You can visit the Tucson baseball team website at www.tucsonbaseball.net for information about refunds. Again, www.tucsonbaseball.net. It's 9:43 and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. As a child, Charlene Wirtz grew up watching her mom sew, crochet, and macrame. She loved the vibrant colors and textures so much that she tried her hand at weaving 40 years ago and fell in love. When Wirtz and her husband Ted moved to Green Valley from Bend, Oregon 18 months ago, they brought 2 looms. She'd weaved rugs, saddle blankets, shawls, scarves, and dish towels, and she's in the middle of creating napkins as a gift. Wirtz will be bringing many of those items with her to Desert Meadows Park on October 18th. She is just one of more than 100 artists who will be on hand for the Art in the Park event, which runs from 9 in the morning to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. She'll also bring art in another form. 12 years ago, Wirtz found a new vocation after taking a basket weaving class in Bend and a Navajo weaving class, so now she's also freeform pine needle basket weaver. I've always been interested in basketry because every culture does baskets, and so everywhere we've ever traveled, I've always tried to find an indigenous basket or some type of fiber piece, and every basket you see is handmade. You can't make them by machine, so they're kind of fascinating, Vert said. There are three types of basket weaving: coiling, plaiting, and twining. Each one uses different methods of interlacing flexible materials to create a basket or another structure. Vertz prefers coiling, and she loves to incorporate other materials in her pine needle creations. Materials like driftwood, rock slabs, beads, and copper, choya, and cobblestones. And lately she's been experimenting with prickly pear skeletons. Sometimes she'll dye the pine needles for a splash of color, or use colored wax, linen thread to interlace everything together. What does that mean? What does she mean when she says she's a freedom basket weaver? Well, she lets each project decide where it wants to go. While some of her finished pieces are traditional bread and business card baskets, others resemble beautifully coiled snakes or are indescribable three-dimensional pieces of art. Some are as large as 12 by 18 inches, others are a mere 6 inches tall, and most take about a month to create. The material she uses depends on where she's living. In Oregon, she used ponderosa pine, and here she uses Apache pine that she finds in the Santa Rita and Chiricahua Mountains, along with choya. She cooks them in glycerin in the early stages to make them softer and easier to work with. Ted is a retired United Methodist pastor, and they've lived in a variety of places, including Elko, Nevada. The retired fire department administrator became a commercial artist years ago when she realized she needed money for more yarn. She sold saddle blankets in Elko, and while in Bend, she was a permanent artist at a gallery and occasionally sold commissioned pieces, although she admits she doesn't enjoy trying to fulfill someone else's vision. She sold most of her inventory before moving to Green Valley, so she's been trying to build it back up again. Her dream is to find a gallery in Tubac to show her wares. She's looking forward to Art in the Park because it'll give her a chance to meet and chat with other artists of all kinds. They moved to Green Valley because they have friends here and were looking for a social group and a cause. And they're involved with the Samaritans and the Green Valley Gardeners, and she's a member of the Green Valley Fiber Arts Guild. Just so you know, Art in the Park runs from 9 in the morning to 2 o'clock p.m. on Saturday, the 18th, at Desert Meadows Park at La Huerta and Abrego Drive, and more than 100 artists, 7 food trucks, music, and entertainment will be on hand. This year, La Posada will provide parking at Madara Plaza, and that's at 518 East White House Canyon Road, with shuttle buses, and there will be a bicycle parking area across the street from the park. And we're a little light on news from the Green Valley and Suarita News for this morning, so I'm going to go to an article that was in the Arizona Daily Star on Sunday from Washington. President Donald Trump was passed over for the Nobel Peace Prize on Friday, despite jockeying from his fellow Republicans, various world leaders, and, most vocally, himself. Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado was awarded the prize. The Norwegian Nobel Committee said it was honoring Machado for her tireless work promoting democratic rights for the people of Venezuela and for her struggle to achieve a just and peaceful transition from a dictatorship to a democracy. Machado, however, said she wanted to dedicate the win to Trump, along with the people of her country, as she praised the president for support of her cause. The White House responded bitterly to the news of the award on Friday, with Communications Director Stephen Chung saying that members of the Nobel Committee proved they place politics over peace because they didn't recognize Trump, especially after the Gaza ceasefire deal that his administration helped strike this week. He has the heart of a humanitarian, and there will never be anyone like him who can move mountains with the sheer force of his will, Chung wrote on social media. The White House didn't comment on Machado's recognition, but Trump on social media shared Machado's post praising him. Her opposition to President Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela aligns the Trump administration's own stance on Venezuela, and Secretary of State Marco Rubio previously praised her as the personification of resilience, tenacity, and patriotism. Trump, who has long coveted the prestigious prize, has been outspoken about his desire for the honor during both of his terms, particularly lately as he takes credit for ending conflicts around the world. The Republican president has expressed doubts that the Nobel Committee would ever grant him the award. They'll do what they have to, what they do. Whatever they do is fine. I know this. I didn't do it for that. I did it because I saved a lot of lives, Trump said on Thursday. Although Trump received nominations for the prize, many of them occurred after the February 1st deadline for the 2025 award, which fell just a week and a half into his presidency. And moving on to sports at 10 minutes till the hour. The Wildcats lost on Saturday. And the title of this story out of the Arizona Daily Star is Wind Slips Away Amid the Storm. Arizona's 33-27 loss to number 18 BYU in double overtime on Saturday was a Pac-12 After Dark-esque special, which featured wild plays and momentum swings, and it ended up being a later night game due to the effects of the tropical storm Priscilla that had made its way through southern Arizona over the weekend. The Cats overcame a two-touchdown deficit in the early stages of the game and even held a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter, but in the end, the Cougars prevailed to preserve their unbeaten record and winning streak over Arizona, which fell to 4-2 on the season. We just battled the first-place team in the Big 12 for four quarters and two overtimes, and we never backed down, said Arizona head coach Brent Brennan. We didn't get the result that we wanted, but those kids played their hearts out, and that's something to be excited about. The goal is to win, and I understand that. We're a better football team. We're halfway through the season, and we have a lot to work on, but we also have a lot to feel good about. The thing that's so hard about this is at the time we were unable to get it done. And here are some notable storylines, statistics, and quotes, among other pertinent information from the loss to Brigham Young. BYU initially appeared to be in position to control the game and win in dominant fashion, especially how its offense was effectively running the football. BYU star running back L.J. Martin and freshman quarterback Bear Bachmeier combined for 47 carries, 251 rushing yards, and three rushing touchdowns. BYU had 51 rush attempts for 258 yards as a team on Saturday, and the Cougars averaged 7.3 yards per game, or per quarter, that is, per carry, that is, in the first quarter. They made wide receiver Parker Kingston took advantage of Arizona's busted zone coverage and scored a 75-yard touchdown to grab a 14-0 lead. The Cats answered with a scoring drive capped by Arizona quarterback Fifita throwing a 17-yard touchdown pass to wide receiver Chris Hudson, who had a season-high 9 receptions for 106 yards and a touchdown. Hudson had 3 catches for 42 receiving yards on Arizona's first scoring drive of the game. Arizona focused on just trying to stay in it during the rain delay that happened and caused the game to be delayed by 70 minutes. It's the second U of A home game this season that had a weather delay. And at the time of Arizona's 48-3 win over Weber State last month, that game had been delayed by 2 hours. It was at least 30 minutes, regardless of how many lightning strikes there were, said Stu Traden Stooks. We knew we were going to be in there for a second. We were looking at plays, looking at things to clean up and refocusing, staying loose in the locker room, and looking forward to getting back out there. And Fifita added, we had 3 drives to watch film on, so we watched film, made some adjustments to our game, and just kept the guys in it mentally and physically. The Cats hit the road to play Houston next weekend, and the time is 9 a.m. and could be seen on Fox Sports 1. It's the fifth consecutive game with a kickoff time before 7 p.m. It's the first morning kickoff for Arizona since the last game in Houston back in 2018. The Wildcats are open as a 1.5-point underdogs, according to Action Network. Arizona is 2-3 all-time against Houston since their first contest in 1969. The Cats won the first Big 12 matchup with the Cougars 27-3 last season. In Arizona's last trip to Houston in 2018, which was former head coach Kevin Sumlin's inaugural season at the U of A, the Cats lost 45-18. Houston is 5-1 this season, and its only setback is against ninth-ranked Texas Tech. The Cougars routed Oklahoma State 39-17 Saturday in Stillwater. I'm proud of this football team, Brennan said. I think we're making progress. I'm sick about the result tonight, but I believe in these players. I believe in these coaches, and I'm excited what's coming next in the next couple of weeks. Fifita said there's a 24-hour rule to sulk over the setback. The loss is going to hurt, but at the end of the day, we've got another opportunity, said the Arizona quarterback. We've got a road game against another good opponent. It's back to the drawing board for us. We come back in on Sunday to recover, and we put this game behind us mentally, and then we get a head start on taking on Houston. From London, Bo Nix threw an early touchdown pass. Will Lutz kicked a late go-ahead field goal, and the Broncos sacked Justin Fields 9 times, with the final one sealing an ugly 13-11 victory over the winless New York Jets on Sunday in London. The Broncos, who are 4-2 now, won their third in a row, but found themselves trailing 11-10 after conceding a safety in the third quarter against a Jets team that managed just 82 total net yards on offense. Nix, who was 19 of 30 for 174 yards, led Denver on a 12-play, 65-yard drive that ended with Lutz's 27-yard field goal with just over 5 minutes left. Despite a horrendous offensive display, the Jets, who are now winless at 0-6, had the ball with a chance to drive for potential winning score, but Fields was sacked by Jonathan Cooper, Justin Strand on 4th-and-8 from the Denver 44, after Aaron Glenn opted to go for it rather than send out former Arizona Wildcat Nick Folk for a long field goal attempt. Folk was 3-for-3 for the day. And that will take care of the reading of the Green Valley News for this Monday. Mark DeGroft with you. Thank you for coming along. And I'll be back on Wednesday. Till then, take care.